Thank you very much. Well, I'm doing old-fashioned transparencies, so... Well, this, it's a discussion session, so it's like halfway between a computer presentation and a Blackboard talk, so...
I changed it to talk, as you...
Yeah. Okay, so I would like to describe the work which was done on expanding Chadwell-Stone coupling, which... and this general approach, which we started with Robert Peszański, and then subsequent work with Michał Heller, Piotr Surówka, Johannes Grosse, Alex Buchel, Paulo Benincasa.
I think everybody noticed that Heller got the Templeton Prize.
Not this one. So first I would like to give general motivation, what were the aims that we wanted to address. Then I would like to describe the ADS-CFT framework which we are using and give some examples which are exactly solvable. Then I would like to describe expanding Boolean event plasma and the methodology of doing the computations there. And then I would like to move on and study, take this expanding Boolean event plasma background as given, and then try to look at the various feature physical properties of the expanding plasma. So I would like to describe thermalization. I put it here in quotes because I will try to say what I exactly mean by this. Introduction of particle flavors, fundamental flavors, into the theory. And then I would like to describe some work in progress, namely on particle production and anisotropic plasma at Stone coupling, and give some other outlook. So now the aim is to use ADS-CFT to study dynamical time-dependent processes of any cool for plasma. So the ultimate goal, I mean, this context would be to have two sheets of matter which would collide and then to have a full description of the collision. But this is very difficult. The most interesting question would be how thermalization appears and how it depends on the parameters of those two colliding sheets of matter. So on the gravity side, it would be seen as a kind of formation of a dual black hole. But this is still very difficult. So what we are most addressing, we are addressing the later stage when there is a fireball of plasma and it expands and cools. So the question is how to describe, for example, this type of behavior. And then study properties of this expanding plasma system, like equilibration time, what is its influence on fundamental flavors, particle production. And finally, also another work in progress which we are right now doing is to use the same framework for a situation which is out of equilibrium, but kind of static, namely to study anisotropic plasma at Stone coupling with view of finding instabilities in this context at Stone coupling. So first, just some comments which are the same as in yesterday's talk, namely one has to keep in mind the differences between N equal to 4 plasma and QCD plasma. So first of all, there are lots of similarities, like it's the confinement phase and strongly coupled theory. However, there are some important differences, which depending on what kind of questions one asks, they may be important or not important. So in particular, this non-running coupling, that means that, for example, at very high energy densities, coupling will remain strong. There is no asymptotic freedom. Always we have conformal equation of state. So for example, just after the phase transition, one knows that there's a big violation of conformality in real QCD plasma, but here it's not present. And also we have no confinement, the confinement phase transition. So the plasma fireball will cool indefinitely, so reaching zero temperature. So there's no description of cadenization within, I mean, this framework of N equal to 4 plasma. So, but nevertheless, the motivation is that we have a term model where we may compute from first principles some dynamical properties. We may hope to discover some universal properties like the celebrated eta over S ratio. And also the motivation here is that N equal to 4 plasma has the simplest setting of ADS-CFT. So once we know what happens here, we may try to lift some of those assumptions. And there are versions of ADS-CFT which, for example, have some scale, have a confinement phase transition. So, I mean, this may be seen as a starting point to move to more realistic cases.
the way you said universal property sounds as to be theta over S would be the value you find in QCD, which certainly isn't like that. You don't mean universal properties meaning that this also is valid for QCD.
I would say
the same universality class, you're thinking about some bound.
Yes, I'm thinking that some properties may be the same in a right range of theories. Now, whether this would apply to QCD, it's a different matter, and I don't want to. I definitely don't want to make a point that eta over s equal to 1 over 4 pi will certainly hold at QCD at some level. Finally, I would like to comment a bit about comparison with previous calculations of viscosity and transport coefficients. So it was also part of the motivation for our work, because most of the previous computations were based on fluctuations around some static plasma at fixed temperature. Then one looked at hydrodynamic modes, at modes, looked at the dispersion relation, and from the dispersion relation, one could evaluate the transport coefficients. So this was like linearized hydrodynamics. So our motivation was to try to study hydrodynamics in the nonlinear regime. So with this really an expansion which is macroscopic and it's not a small perturbation on top of something which is static. And now the fact that from this approach one gets the same result as from here is technically non-trivial. And it's a kind of consistency check of and also the ultimate goal would be to study configurations which are very far away from a thermal system or far from hydrodynamics. So this would be the goal, of course, too. So we wanted to have something general. Okay, so now I would like to describe this ADS-CFT framework, which we are using. So again, this would be a lot of overlap with yesterday's talk. So ADS-CFT states that n equal to 4 super young mills on Minkowski space is exactly equivalent to super strings on ADS-5 cross S5 geometry. So now since this is an equivalence, we should be able to, for any system in the gauge theory, we should be able to find some dual picture on the string side. So the aim is to look for configurations here which would correspond to an expanding plasma system on the gauge theory side. So how does it look? So if we just have the vacuum here and empty safe space on the other side, we have the following picture of this ADS-5 geometry. If you recall, there's a bound. So we have an additional coordinate z, where z equal to 0 will be the boundary. Now here will be the bulk geometry, and the metric for ADS-5 is given by the Minkowski metric plus dz squared over z squared. So distances shrink when we go into the bulk. And all the during my talk, I will ignore the S5 factor. Also, we also made some computations, including some dynamics of this S5. So this is empty space. Now, since we have here real superstrings and supergravity theory, we can consider the same setting, and we can have here some closed strings or gravitons in the ADS-5 cross S5 background. So suppose that we have some supergravity field inside. This will now correspond to some state in engaged theory with some given expectation values of the corresponding operator. Because in ADS-CFT, we have a dictionary between fields on the supergravity of string side and operators on the gauge theory side. For example, exciting a graviton or gravitons in the bulk would correspond to giving some expectation value of T mu nu on the bound for the gauge theory. A dilaton will give some expectation value of trace F squared. However, generic operators correspond to generic string states, and unfortunately, we have very little control over these expectation values and these fields. So for the moment, I will only concentrate on fields and expectation values, which correspond to supergravity fields. Now, this is something simple, relatively. But ultimately, since we expect that macroscopic plasma would be something very complicated system, who can excite lots of, let's say, gravitons, then this would be really described by a change in the metric. So here we now have some different metric, g mu nu of x mu, where this part depends on both on the space-time coordinates on the boundary and the z bulk coordinate. And this will get mapped to some macroscopic space-time profile of energy moment tensor. And the whole idea of this framework is to use this mapping in both ways to gain information about the plasma dynamics. So now I'll just briefly recall how this mapping works, which was also shown yesterday. So this was first explicitly derived by the Harrows-Lukin and Skenderis. So the first question is, if you have a given geometry, how to read off the expectation value of T mu nu? And as Keo mentioned, there's a very simple prescription. One has to write the geometry, the metric in Pfeffermann-Graham coordinates, which is just a choice of coordinates such that d z squared has coefficient 1, and then now of diagonal terms between the bulk coordinate and the boundary coordinates. So we can always put any metric in this form. Now, here, this will be a function of space-time coordinates and the z coordinate. So now we have to take this function here and perform an Taylor series expansion around the boundary. The first term would be the physical four-dimensional metric, which would be just Minkowski space. So in our case, it's Minkowski. Now, the second term will vanish automatically by equations of motion. And it turns out that the coefficient of z to the 4 is exactly given by gives exactly the expectation value of T mu nu with this numerical coefficient related to the number of colors. Okay. So in this way, one can get from the geometry to T mu nu.
These coordinates have been used before for other purposes? Or?
Well, in fact, in mathematics, for some questions of conformal invariance of some geometries, and to study the structure of locally ADS geometries, asymptotically ADS geometries. Yeah. So now the second point is, if we have some Q mu nu, how to reconstruct the dual geometry? So we just have to find solutions of Einstein equations with negative cosmological constant, which satisfy the boundary conditions that g mu nu close to the boundary, where this z is, so we fix the Pfeffermann-Graham coordinate choice. The leading piece should be the Minkowski metric, and the z to the 4 part should be expectation value of t mu nu, which we want to study. Now, it turns out that these equations automatically imply that this has to be traceless, and this has to be conserved with respect to the boundary metric, so it's consistent. But there are no other requirements, I mean, from this point of view. So given any T mu nu, we can just recursively determine all the remaining part of the metric. So the framework that proposed is just to use the standard procedure in ADS CFT. Namely, that we have to also impose some global condition on the behavior of the geometry. So for generic plasma configuration, we construct a dual by taking T mu nu, construct the metric, and then physical configuration should correspond to non-singular geometry where there are no curvature singularities in the bulk. So in this way, we'll have the second choice, which should pick out the physical profiles of T mu nu. And then we have to study properties of the background.
Well, could you not have this singular really behind the horizon, so you don't care about it?
Yes, probably yes.
You
so
just don't tell me.
Yes, but generically one will have singularities in front of. In fact.
Yeah, so you want horizons, so you
yes.
would be happy to have some.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. So now I would like to give some examples of this procedure. So the simplest possible case is suppose that we have uniform chiasma. So T mu nu is just a constant. So it's diagonal, a constant, and also isotropic. So epsilon is equal to 3p. Now, so we can then solve Einstein equations with these boundary conditions. And what we get is the following geometry here, where the Z0 parameter is linked to this value of the energy density in a simple manner. And this looks somewhat a bit strange at first sight. However, one can easily see that if one performs a simple coordinate transformation, this geometry will be just a standard planar ADS black hole. So in this case, one directly derives from this form of uniform T mu nu the black hole geometry with the position of the horizon, which is related to the energy density of the plasma. Another case which is solvable is a planar shockwave. Namely, so this would model this a nucleus or infinitely boosted sheet of matter which moves at light speed in one direction. So in this case, the only non-vanishing component of T mu nu is T minus minus, which is equal to delta of X minus times some scale. And then one can solve Einstein equations, and the solution is extremely simple, which is given like that. So ultimately, one would like to study the collision of two such shockwaves, but this is unfortunately very complicated math. Okay, so this is the framework. So now I would like to go to the boost invariant plasma and go through. So boost invariant plasma expansion was introduced by Björken back in 83. And the picture is generally that for very high energy collisions, if we are looking at the plasma in the central rapidity regime, we have approximate boost invariance. So that means that all physical quantities such energy density will only depend on proper time and not on rapidity. So we have no dependence on rapidity and no dependence on transverse coordinates, which we also impose as a simplification. Now, with these assumptions, conservation of energy momentum tensor and facelessness allows us to write the whole T mu nu in terms of a single function, which Odekeiro mentioned yesterday, namely epsilon of tau, which is the energy density in the local rest frame. So now this is purely kinematic, so it's true always in a conformal theory. So the question is, we have to now determine epsilon of tau.
Sorry, can I ask you, to what extent is this a good approximation to the physics at rate? This,
I guess it's quite good. I think it's good. Of course, what's evaluated, what people really do is they have full dependence on transverse coordinates.
But as far as boost invariance is concerned, it's a good approximation.
Oh, actually, yes. It's a very bad approximation.
Yes?
It's a Gaussian. It's, yes. The Gaussian, if you look at it in the proper scale, it looks flat. So it's on the top of the Gaussian.
Yes.
So that's to the extreme central rapidity.
Yes.
But it's a theoretical latch, so what do you worry about?
Okay. I don't know. At least I saw that a lot of hydrodynamic simulations are done with boost invariance, assuming boost invariance. But okay, so what kind of epsilon of tau one may get? So for example, with coupling, if all particles just move not without any interactions, what one gets is epsilon of tau is equal to 1 over tau, or with perturbative interactions. So this is free streaming. If we make a perfect fluid assumption on top of that energy momentum tensor, we have the Björken result, 1 over tau to the fourth cell. If on top of it we have viscosity, which behaves like eta equal to t cube, we have a subleading term with a specific power and specific coefficient related to viscosity. If we have second order hydrodynamics, which depends on relaxation time, we have a specific next to leading order coefficient. And of how this is related to eta and relaxation time depends on the version of the formalism. And now there are some various versions which float around. So anyway, we would like to reproduce these results from ADS-CFT. So how can this behavior be seen in ADS-CFT? So technically, what we do is we focus on late-time asymptotics. So we take epsilon of tau to be 1 over tau to the S, and we want to fix S. So we define a geometry which has the symmetries. So we have three coefficient functions which depend on Z and tau. So let's look at the first one. The leading piece is given by the boundary condition, and from this leading piece we can determine the coefficients as functions of tau of all the other pieces, recursively, for example, using MAPLE. And then if we look at those coefficients, we can just pick the large tau behavior of each of those terms. And it turns out that when we do that, this A function becomes a function of a single scaling variable of Z over tau to the S over 4. So now we can solve Einstein equations, which are ordinary differential equations, and get the background for arbitrary S. So I will just flash how it looks like. At least it's completely analytic, and the coefficients depend on the exponent. So it's not important to see the details. However, what one can see is that there may be some singularity in the bulk because of this logarithm term here. So now we have to check the non-singularity criterion. So to compute the square of the Riemann curve tensor, for example, and we find that it's non-singular only for s equal to 4 over 3, the leading time behavior. So that means that late time dynamics is described really by perfect fluid hydrodynamics, which came out here as an outcome. And the geometry, the solution for this case looks like that, which, if you would recall, is exactly like a black hole, but with the position of the horizon, which is a function of proper time. And this horizon moves into the bulk as tau to the one cell. So if we now say that the temperature should be roughly like 1 over the position of the horizon, then it's 1 over tau to the one cell, which is the cooling in the open dynamics. And also entropy permittivity is constant. OK, so this is the perfect fluid result. Now, is it exact? So to this end, we can look at the solution beyond the leading order. And we see that this leading part is non-singular. But at 1 over tau to the fourth cell, we have a fourth of the power singularity. And we can do nothing with it. So this means that this is a bad assumption about the physics. So we have to supplement it by some correction which vanishes at large times. So we put in 1 plus coefficient over tau to the L with some power, which we do not know a priori what it is. So then we again solve for the geometry and look at the square of the curvature. So we find that this term is non-singular as before. The term 1 over tau to the R is also non-singular automatically. We have this term as before, which was singular. And we have an additional term 1 over tau to the 2R, which is also singular. So now the only possibility to cancel the singularity is that 2R is equal to 4 thirds. So R is equal to 2 thirds, right?
I guess I didn't pay attention. That's what does
B? Sir?
What does
V? V is a scaling variable Z over tau to the one third. So it turns out that naturally the solution, the Einstein equations, at late times is an expansion, a function of V, plus corrections 1 over tau to some power, another function of V, and so on.
Excuse me, your procedure to say I look for non-singular solutions in the bulk, is that really giving you a unique solution? Is it clear that this is sufficient determine a solution uniquely? Or could there be two?
Well, of course, there's always a freedom of rescaling, right, in this context, an overall scale. So in fact, but it's also physically, one can have various energy densities to start with. So this is the only freedom which is in this kinematics, because here we have imposed so many symmetry restrictions. If one would have, let's say, the full space-time dependence, then of course there would be class of, let's say, solutions, which would, for example, correspond to possible solutions of hydrodynamics at late times. But it, so certainly it, it cuts down the number of the possible number of motions.
What about this 1/12 to the r?
Yeah.
What about other
functional form? Yes. Yeah, so for example, here, one sees that this is singular and this is singular. So in order to have to cancel the singularity, this should cancel out. So 2r, r should be 2/3. And also the coefficient has to be fixed in order to cancel the singularity which we had from the leading order. So, and this is nice because exactly 2/3 is the power which is expected from viscosity corrections to Bjorken flow. If it would be something like 4/5, then it would be, it would not be viscosity.
But if I have a non-singular term, I could multiply x extra r1 multiplied by something.
Yes, but then, of course, well, but then at some higher orders, one have 1/(2r1) singularity. And this has to be cancelled by something else. So I would say that the problem is that it's impossible to find a solution which functionally depends on epsilon of tau. So we have to make a kind of approximations and pick some terms and then play around, make a kind of expansion. So at least this says that the leading the leading behavior, the leading, the first subleading contribution comes exactly with the power 2/3, which is like from viscous expansion. And moreover, this also fixes the coefficient to be the one which is compatible with, which is exactly given by eta over s equal to 1/4 pi. So this comes from balancing the coefficients of those two terms.
No, but for example, this other one is touted as a lower limit. So if I have...
No, but here it's fixed. It cannot be anything else. If it would be different here, then those two singularities would not cancel out. So this shows that in n equal to 4 plasma, because here, because we are using those Einstein equations, we are saying that the theory, the gauge theory which we are studying is n equal to 4 plasma. It's nothing else. So in this theory, the viscosity has this definite value. Okay, so in this way, one can see how this type of viscous corrections and coefficients come out. Then one can go high to higher orders, look at subleading corrections. So now we did not really do an analysis, but just took the power from, let's say, hydrodynamic expectations. We again find here some fourth of the pole, which can be cancelled if this coefficient is a certain value, and this determines relaxation time in second order hydrodynamics. And what is quite strange that we also did with Alex Buchel and Paulo Benicasa, Michał Heller, same calculation in Klebanov-Witten theory, and we found that this relaxation time in that theory is exactly the same as in n equal to 4. So there might be also a similar universality as for viscosity for the relaxation time. But it's not proved in any way. But it will be interesting to see that if it holds.
Is it being calculated in any other example?
No, just these two. However, here we find some problem with the formalism, namely that the fourth of the pole singularities are cancelled by this choice of relaxation time. However, a logarithmic singularity remains. And we tried with Alex a lot of things, but it cannot be cancelled, so it remains here. So one possible interpretation is that this might signify that the assumption of boost invariant is wrong, and there might be some instabilities. So what is suggested was some work by Raju Venugopalan, Michael Strickland, and also Ton Reben, who showed that in Kallikratz condensate, they are rapidly violating the boost invariant violating instabilities. So a small perturbation which violates boost invariant grows indefinitely. And so we might be seeing, I mean, this.
Sorry, I'm not sure whether I know the paper, but when they talk about boost invariants, don't they mean boost invariants of the fields rather than the hydrodynamic variables?
Well, but they do before. Mm-hmm. They're in the early stage, so they do not have hydrodynamic. Yeah, but if the fields evolve in a boost non-invariant way, then this will propagate to the energy density.
Not necessarily. Microscopic description.
So I don't know. I mean, this is a puzzle. This is one possible possibility. I don't know how to really show that this singularity is linked with instabilities. The problem is that the metric at this order is extremely complicated. So it's really ugly. I mean, these variables.
If it's unstable, you should have the unstable solution, right? I mean, normally when there's instability, you have a regular solution. It's just unstable, right? I mean, if it's not regular, it means it's just not there. Not that it's there and it's unstable. I don't know any examples where where singularity is instability.
Well, there are some cases, for example, people studied on the in general relativity in four dimensions, like a negative mass Schwarzschild black hole, or some very highly rotating black holes, which are above this bound. So there appears a naked singularity, and they also found that in some of those cases, they have instabilities. So, for example, looking like Schwarzschild with negative mass or very highly rotating.
Sure, but we think that Schwarzschild have negative mass just doesn't exist. I mean.
Yes. So here, the idea would be that since it's extremely unstable, so infinitesimal perturbation would drive you away from the solution. It would be just like sitting on top of the potential, so you would never see it. Right? It will always go. And the only reason why we are seeing it is that we impose by force symmetry properties, which would not allow us to move in one or the other direction.
Is there something conceptual which prevents one by going one or order?
Not conceptual, but it's...
It is complicated. Yeah, but
complicated.
It must be doable, but maybe you can get a hint of what is happening.
But the equations are so horrible that I would never do it.
But actually, it makes all the expressions.
Yes. So at least in principle, it's not... I would say that there's nothing conceptual, but just technical problems in calculating. Okay, so now I would like to move back and to some physical properties of these geometries, which we considered up to now. So first we looked with Robbie on thermalization in this expanding plasma system. So here, thermalization is meant not in the sense of initial thermalization, namely after the collision, how much time does it take to the plasma to thermalize, which is a very difficult question and in fact, but the most interesting, but something else, namely if we have already this expanding plasma, we perturb it by some small, let's say, perturbation, then will it decay? Will it decay? And if yes, how? So the first, which is motivated by those classic works on static plasma by Horvitz-Hubene, stagnants. Namely, for example, if we consider in the fixed temperature, fixed decays, a perturbation of Txy or B squared minus E squared, which would be a perturbation of the metric or the dilaton in this geometry. So then this will be, we have to impose boundary conditions, namely Dirichlet boundary conditions on the boundary and incoming boundary conditions at the horizon. And from solving the wave equations here, one gets complex frequencies. And the imaginary part will then give the decay of the perturbation. So for example, for the lowest frequency in the scalar channel, one has this explicit result. So we get e to minus 2747 pi t times the time dependence. So we wanted to see if this expanding plasma has a similar properties, and if yes, if there are some differences. So we just looked at the perfect fluid geometry including viscosity corrections. So we looked at scalar channel perturbation, so just wave equations in this expanding geometry. And we find that this one difference, namely that if one performs variable separations, separation of variables in that wave equation, instead of exponential, one gets a Bessel function with some rational coefficients here. And the other function becomes a function of the scaling variable, which fortunately is just satisfies the same equation as for static black hole, but with Z interchange with V with the scaling variable. So that means that omega, which we get from here, is exactly the same as for the static case, at least the late time expansion. However, when we put this omega into the Bessel function, this will give a different type of exponential decay time. Nimitz damping will be a constant times tau to the power 2/3, with also some power law cofactors here. In a way, this is very natural, because the frequency for the static case depends on the time, on the temperature. And here the temperature is a function of time. So to get this result, one could change omega times t into an integral omega d tau and get, in fact, this result. Now, if we go beyond leaving out the and include viscosity corrections, then, of course, this will no longer be completely true. And also, one will have some, also here, we have also some power law factors, which are not captured by just this reasoning. But at least we see that the expanding plasma is stable against perturbations. So, in fact, it's quite nice. One could speculate that it's kind of attractor geometry for the evolution. That if we come sufficiently close to the plasma, then deviations will die off exponentially, and then we'll get just hydrodynamic expansion. Okay, so this is one possibility. Then we also looked at, so up to now we studied just pure n equal to 4 theory. But suppose we add fundamental flavors, so fields in the fundamental representation. And so now consider n equal to 4 superangles plus one additional flavor. So this breaks supersymmetry to n equal to 2. And the question would be, how does the evolving plasma feedback on the properties of the mesons and of the quarks in this theory? One word of caution is that here, in fact, this theory does not have chiral symmetry breaking, so it's not realistic, I mean, for QCD physics, but it's the simplest case. So ultimately, one will want to do the same thing, but with some setup where one has chiral symmetry breaking. So here, this is just theoretical toy to see at least how does the plasma fit on flavors in some, let's say, simplest model which one can think of.
If you put two additional flavors, can you get chiral symmetry breaking?
No, but here there's no chiral symmetry breaking at all. I mean, it's not for the case of U1. Not because of U1, but then because of supersymmetry. Oh. So in fact, to get chiral symmetry breaking, one has to really break supersymmetry. So, but then the problem is that geometries are much more complicated. So then looking at time-dependent flows is complicated. But it's very interesting, of course, I mean, to do that.
I don't know if it's so relevant, given that you want to study the plasma phase. And in that phase, you imagine that chiral symmetry, after the deconfinement is restored anyway. Mm-hmm. So you could also say this theory doesn't have confinement deconfinement position. But as long as you only want to use it as a model.
Yeah, if I'm sufficiently far away from the transition.
I don't think that's actually very relevant.
Mm-hmm. So if one is indeed far away in the broken phase, then it does not matter. Yeah, the problem would be for phase transition, which is, I mean, cooling to the it's a hydrogenization phase, but this we cannot describe at all. Okay, so how does one describe flavors in the ADS-CFT picture? So one embeds a D7 brain in the geometry. So before we had just D3 brains, and the strings here were just fields of n equal to 4 superangles. Now if we have a D7, we'll have a string stretching from here to here, which will be will have just one chiral index, so this will be a quark. A string stretching in the other direction would be an anti-quark. Now, if we go to the ADS-CFT language, all those NC-DC brains will be described really by this curved geometry. So in this case, we'll have just a probe D7 brain and those strings which are attached. And now to have a great invariant object, we have to, the simplest configuration will be a string like that, which has has an interpolation of a QQ bar state, which is kind of meson. And the lightest mesons can be described by these fluctuations of the V7 brain embedding in the geometry. So what is the situation for the static temperature case? So we have to embed the D7 brain in the black hole geometry. So here we have some coordinates. I don't want to discuss them in detail. Anyway, what is important is that here is the boundary, and here is the horizon of the black hole. Now, here are different embeddings of D7 brains. And the position from which we start at the boundary is the current quark mass, which we put in into the theory. From the slope here, one can read off the Carroll condensate theory. And one can find the embedding by solving the equations of motion and imposing non-singularity. So there are basically two types of embeddings. When the mass is high with respect to the scale set by the temperature, we have Minkowski embedding which will not touch the horizon. And in this case, mesons are stable. So even so we are above the confirmed phase transition, we have some bound states which are real bound states. If the mass is low, then the D7 brain embeddings touch the horizon and the meson dissociate, and one can see technically that the frequencies have imaginary parts. So now we'll just consider this case, which is easier. And the basic procedure here would be, in the static case, fix the mass and the temperature. So this fixes the geometry, this fixes the boundary condition, get the embedding, read of the condensate, study fluctuations, and obtain the meson masses from solving appropriate wave equations.
So it's conformally invariant still, although you have this mass.
Well, the mass gives a scale. Yes.
So it breaks conformally.
Yes, yes. But here we are in the trope D7 approximation. So if we have one flavor, we do not consider the back reaction of this flavor onto the geometry. So the plasma evolves as if it doesn't feel the presence of flavors. So what we are really studying is how this evolving plasma modifies the properties of flavors which feel the geometry. So this was the question. So how does the expanding plasma modify flavor physics? So we use late-time embeddings. So the problem is that the embedding equations for the embedding are really nonlinear partial differential equations. So they are extremely difficult to solve exactly. But if we use late-time expansion, we can solve them order by order, and we get some, let's say, result, which is not important here. One can read off the condensate, which, including terms with viscosity, behaves like epsilon squared of tau over mq to the fifth. And then what we were most interested here was to look at fluctuations and look at mesons. What is the behavior of mesons in this theory?
What would be wrong with just solving them numerically? Just to know, I mean, you want to know something analytically as well?
But... Well, the problem here is the boundary conditions, which are difficult to implement because, well, on one side, on the boundary, it's simple because one just fits the mass. But in the bulk, one has to pick a non-singular solution because generic solution will go to infinity or will go somewhere. And this is not the physical one.
You know, this is like just writing a routine that, you know, just looks binary search or whatever. I mean, there are tons of routines that mm-hmm. would give you the stable
yes.
solution mm-hmm. in the end by fine-tuning.
Yes, I guess. So if one, it's possible. One, let's say, conceptual problem, not conceptual, but fundamental problem, would be that our geometry, which we have, is not really exact, but is given as kind of late-time expansion. So we cannot trust it, I mean, to arbitrary. Okay, but still, perhaps, I guess one could do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you try integrating from the boundary inwards? Because in the static case, we did it from the horizon outwards, and that's much, much simpler. You don't have to fine-tune it.
From the horizon up,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We didn't try. In fact, we didn't try. In fact, we were so we're considering always this late time expansion because our geometry was not, we didn't test it well enough. But I guess that would, one could really make sense. I mean, we definitely identify the region of space time where it's valid and then use the numerics. Yeah, then it's possible. But we didn't try it. It's something which is very interesting to do, especially in view of this transition between the black hole embedding and the Minkowski embedding. Because there's certainly something will be something interesting will happen when the meson become something from the unbound state to the from the melting phase to the stable phase. This transition may be very interesting to see indeed. Okay, so here the problem with looking at those fluctuations is again we have a lack of separability. So in order to make a perturbative expansion, we have to fix this ansatz for fluctuations in some detail. So what we chose was to have here some functions of the bulk coordinate in a time expansion. And in front, we have some Bessel functions, which are functions of integral of omega of tau d tau, where omega is some tau-dependent frequency. Now, the fact that we have Bessels is natural because we use Boost-invariant coordinates, and Klein-Gordon solution in Boost-invariant, these rapidity coordinates have these solutions as the basic ones. And from this, we then determine the tau-dependent frequencies, omega of tau. So, well, for the lowest mode, we have some explicit result with some powers which depend on the energy density and time and the quark mass. Now we can ask, how do these modes look like on the boundary? So to do that, we just have to take the boundary value of this fluctuation field and see what is the profile which can be seen on the gauge theory side. And then we may look, what is the equation which is satisfied by this profile, these profiles? And we find that to the order that we computed, this mode satisfy a Klein-Gordon equation with a mass which depends on time. So we have omega squared of tau times delta phi. Now it is, which was determined before of the last transparency. Now if you look at it, it's exactly the form for scalar fields in a cosmological setting. So if one performs quantization of a scalar field with the mode satisfy this time of this type of equation where the frequency depends on time, one expects particle production from the standard case of, let's say, Bogle-Lubov transformations and stuff like that. So in fact, this is now a work in progress, so we want to compute, look at particle production in the plasma case using those techniques of cosmological particle production, because the equations are just exactly, I mean, the same, just the origin is different, because the whole dependence on time comes from the change of the geometry, which expands, while here this change in time comes from the expansion of plasma and how it feeds back on the properties of the mesons.
The background metric is still that.
Yes, yes. The background Minkowski is Minkowski. Yes, so it's not that. So the origin is quite different, but the mathematical form is very extremely similar. So the same kind of procedure should hold.
Yeah. If you go in Lorentz Walker, you could form time.
Yes, 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 yes. It's a specific omega. Okay, so now the final project which we are now working on is, so now we leave this expanding plasma case and look at anisotropic plasma at strong coupling. So the motivation, of course, was led by all the people here on plasma instabilities at weak coupling. Namely, if one has anisotropic ground momentum distribution, one can see that small fluctuations give some unstable mode. And one can look at either at looking at fluctuations or at time evolution with some initial condition and see how it isotopizes, will isotopize at late times. So we, so this is more difficult, so we are looking just at something, some setup which is similar to this setup. So now, how to study anisotropic plasma at strong coupling? So if we, let's look at energy momentum tensor, which follows from having an anisotropic momentum distribution for the gluons, which is uniform in space and time. So that means that T mu nu is just diagonal. However, the pressure in the longitudinal direction is different from pressures in two other directions, which we choose arbitrarily. So it's still traceless. And we consider just a static configuration. So here we have just Minkowski coordinates, so not the Bjorken ones. And now we can try to apply the framework. So having T mu nu, we can try to get the dual geometry. And then look at how it, look what are its properties, and how does the presence of anisotropy modifies it. So we use this framework to pass from T mu nu to a general metric which is symmetric. So we have three coefficient functions, but now since everything is uniform, they only depend on Z. So we have just ordinary differential equations without any approximation, and we can find an exact solution which depends on two parameters. One is A and B, and these parameters are related to the energy density, longitudinal pressure, and transverse pressure. So the parameter B really measures the anisotropy because it's the difference between P longitudinal and P transverse.
Is this solution regular?
No, 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 no. So now I will try to.
You just said if this is x, why wouldn't you have an exponential? Oh, it's just static.
Yes, it's static.
I think there are no heads there. I mean, it's not easy to put stuff on top of the horizon in a regular way.
Yes, 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 yes. So
and
it's.
Then it may be impossible.
Yes. So. So for B equal to zero, of course, this reduces to the static black hole we have a horizon here. But now, if we put a very small b, but non-zero anisotropy, then in fact, at this point where we had a horizon before, we'll get a curvature singularity. Now, of course, one can say that we can disregard this and throw it away. But what our motivation was that the gauge theory computations, where one could just pick an anisotropic gluon distribution and look for instabilities. Right, and look for some modes which.
But that's never going to be a static solution.
Yes, but.
So I think this is telling you that there isn't a static anisotropic solution.
Yes, but
the calculation people do is you bring a far given temperature.
Yes.
So they use, if you like, a linear response background. They do calculations in for the static case.
I know what they
so
do.
They get it from.
Yes. So here, I mean, the motivation would be, was to try to mimic this type of computation, I mean, in this setting. So now I know that this geometry is completely sick, but the motivation was to see in what way it is sick. So, for example, suppose that we take it seriously, can we see that let's say the fluctuation modes just become unstable, so grow indefinitely. Now, if the fluctuation mode, if we have a situation where an infinitesimal perturbation will drive you away from this setup, this would mean that.
The problem is that looking at fluctuations, the space time is not complete. So stuff can just come in from the singularity.
So yes, so the question is, what kind of boundary conditions one has to impose here? Yeah, so now we are guessing about what...
You can probably get any answer you want, depending on, I mean...
But now, is there natural? So the problem is, can one pose these boundary conditions in some natural way?
Maybe your answer is not good enough. You have these three functions.
I think there's a better way of introducing an isotropy, which mimics what the people in simulations do. So in simulations, if I understand correctly, you assume that you have some hard particles whose distribution function you specify, and you can declare that it's an isotropic. And that's going to feed into the evolution of your soft modes, and they will test and react to this anisotropy. So here you have to somehow mimic this external forcing of the anisotropy. And I think the way to do that is to turn on, for example, a vector field in the background, which is going to pick a direction. And that's going to allow you to have a
So there's one part of calculations that does it this way. But in principle, this is sufficient. So for instance, we did classic statistical field theory simulations where you don't have to have this separation of scales between hard modes, which you keep as a source for anisotropy. So it's not necessary.
No, but if you find a solution with an anisotropic T mu, which is regular here, that would be unstatic, that would be telling you you can have this n equals 4 plasma, the anisotropic. Perhaps
that's more equilibrium states.
Equilibrium.
Huh? Yeah, they'll be telling you you have more equilibrium states than you thought.
Well, that might be unstable equilibrium, but I find that very hard to believe.
But here, the not
really. The physics of horizons, as Sean was saying, horizons don't like being anisotropic.
Yes, so it's not a horizon.
Yeah,
so what I'm saying is that ultimately, one would really like to have an initial value problem. So we start off with anisotropic plasma at some fixed initial time, right? And then look at evolution, right? So here, upstairs, one have a function of two variables, z and tau, t time. Start off from some anisotropic situation and then look at evolution. So now suppose that we have this evolving. So we would start from some anisotropic situation here, and this will isotopize, right? So certainly, from close to here, when the T mu nu is very much anisotropic on the boundary, we will get some very highly rising modes in the gravity, which we will call the solution to change quadratically, right? So in this case, one would say that this solution never appears, right? But now, suppose that we want to concentrate on this initial fact and see how these modes, let's say, arise. So this is the motivation that we put the situation up by hand into that static case, and then try to see if we can see some modes which arise, let's say, exponentially here. So the object here was to try to mimic as close as possible to this setting at recoupling, in a manner which would be technically visible. But I agree. So one has to impose here some kind of boundary conditions and did something which, for some range of parameters, one can. This is a natural choice, but. I mean, we are working on it right now. And well, the motivation is just as I said. That suppose that we would pick this type of, which is a solution of Einstein equations, right? And then we would like to see why it is sick. In the sense to see what kind of modes would be unstable or not. Okay, so now I would like to finish.
So have you reached a conclusion as to what boundary conditions you should impose, or what stage are you?
Well, for very small anisotropy, the behavior of the fluctuations is something that one can have some similarity to incoming, purely incoming boundary conditions into the singularity. So the wave equation, the wave moves just in one direction.
Is this a time-like singularity? It's there everywhere, right, in time?
Yes.
So I don't see how you're going to
prevent
stuff coming out.
I'm not preventing, because, for example, in the case of the horizon, also one has incoming waves and outgoing waves.
But that's a now hypersurface. This is a time-like singularity.
Yeah. Then, so suppose that we want to try to define some boundary conditions when b goes to zero, which go over smoothly to these incoming boundary conditions of the horizon. Then if we look at the equation in the, let's say, small anisotropy regime, then we find that there are two analogs. One's analog of incoming, one's analog of outgoing. And for this, we can look. We do not know what is the answer in general. Well, I'm not 100% sure. about that. Okay, so what I had to present you was this, that it's quite a general framework of going from TMU to the general method and posing non-singularity condition to see what kind of physics is picked up by ADS-CFT. So we find hydrodynamic expansion with specific transport coefficients. We have those leftover regarding singularities, for which again one has to face this problem that for a state which is realized in nature, one says that one cannot, this should not be the case. So there has to be something different here.
Do you know whether those are time-like singularities?
Here not, because here it's because of the form of the metric, which is awful. But really, we did not really try hard to pinpoint that. So we find that again, the expanding plasma really is very much like a black hole, so it's stable against perturbations, which is nice. We have time-dependent mesonic frequencies, so we may try to look at what this implies some particle production, but we do not know yet what kind of scales or production rates will come out. And then we have this anisotropic plasma at strong coupling, and in this setting, we can try to see, for what reasons, I mean, this kind of background is bad or not. Now there are many more open questions. For example, what already Kyle mentioned yesterday, namely definition of entropy and temperature in the time-dependent case. It's not clear at all if one really can define it, I mean, exactly for time-dependent process, especially as if you would associate it with some horizon, which is in the bulk of the geometry, then there's no clear coordinate independent way to associate a given piece of the horizon with some moment in time for the gauge theory. But it would be very interesting to understand, I mean, what are the limitations here and what kind of, how far can we go with these concepts? Now, again, also a question of global structure. What kind of global structure do we expect for this type of time-dependent geometries? Can one have some insight from non-equilibrium field theory, where we have those double second copy behind of fields behind the horizon? But what does it imply for the structure of the horizon which moves in, which is time-dependent? Now, the meaning of logarithmic term singularities, the most interesting question intersecting could be initial thermalization, namely to really consider a collision process and to estimate when, how, and what black hole will form. And also, it would be interesting to introduce, do the same for TOs with scale, and if there's a phase transition. Also, it's conceptually very interesting problem. How would a phase transition, which is first order, like Hawking page in Euclidean spacetime, look like here in this Minkowski in real time? How it would look like? It's difficult to imagine, but it's an extremely interesting open problem, and of course, physically relevant. So thank you very much.